Are we all here? That are okay. Good. In all seriousness, it is a real joy to be back. When people at the parish said, "You're going back to the same place," I said, "Yes, I am." I didn't scandalize them enough to have been not invited. So, but I do appreciate the opportunity to be with so many of you. That, is there anybody here that wasn't here last year? Oh, there is some. Okay. I'm from North Dakota. Yeah. Oh, you remember the one from North Dakota. Okay. And I'm still from North Dakota. I'm from Minot. So, but again, it's a pleasure to be with you. And I know, is Father Kelly here? There he is. I know last year, right before I came, I spoke with him and he said, "Well, we've been doing stewardship for, it's like, I think it was 17 years or it's 18 years. And I thought, well, I can't introduce this to them. We talked about the stories of stewardship that continue to keep us going in it. And so when Sister called me about doing it again this year, I had to think of something and I prayed about it. And so what I came up with is, yes, stewardship. We're going to talk about stewardship, but we're going to add something to it because the church did, called the new evangelization. Now, I don't know if you've done a lot with that. I know we haven't. We haven't. So the exercise of building a bridge between stewardship and the new evangelization was quite a challenge. But who's not up for a challenge? Isn't that the nature of our faith is to be challenged? So I'd like to begin as appreciating, first of all, that we gathered for the Eucharist. And in that prayer, we definitely find our courage, our strength, our enthusiasm to practice stewardship as a way of life. But secondly, when we are sent forth, when we say go forth, the Mass is ended, it's not saying we're done. We're going forth to really become the new evangelization. If this Mass and the sacraments and the Holy Eucharist means anything to us, we're never done. And I realize that, I'm glad we started with that in order to usher us into building that bridge between stewardship and the new evangelization. Before I was, as I mentioned in the homily, I said, you know, we always go back to those early experiences that we have for some reason that somehow had a huge impact on our lives. And before I actually began my first assignment as a newly ordained, I was assigned to a parish in Bismarck, North Dakota. But before I started, I had the opportunity to go to a classmate's ordination, which was in Taipei, Taiwan. It's a long way to go for a wonderful celebration, but this particular person and I became very good friends in the seminary. Antai Mai is his name, and actually he introduced me to some of the Chinese culture that went way beyond my own experience, which was only chow mein and egg fuyang and egg rolls, so I needed a lot to know about it. But you know what? When he came to the United States as a seminarian, he couldn't speak any English. So I picked him up at the airport. I thought, oh, he must be shy. He's not saying anything, you know. And as we got to, and I would talk to him, and when he showed him his room, and he would smile and bow, and I'd bow back, you know. And I'd keep right on talking. And then finally someone tapped on my shoulder and says, he doesn't speak any English, you know. But that's what he needed to do first in order to study theology in the United States. He had to learn English. He had to learn our language. I mean, those of us who spoke it all of our lives still had a problem with it. So I can only imagine what Antai did, but he did very well. And he and I became very, very good friends. At the beginning of his seminary formation, a package arrived in the mail. And I was distributing mail in those days, and I brought it to him, and I saw all the careful wrapping, and he unwrapped it, and there were two Chinese scrolls that his uncle had written, who was a priest in China, and he wanted his nephew to have these scrolls, and so Antai said to me, he said, "Would you help me frame these so I can hang them on my wall, and I can have them for the whole time that I'm here." And so I did. And I said, "So what do they say? What do they say?" his response to me was, too difficult, too difficult. That's just how he said it. Too difficult. And so I thought, okay. So 4 years later, he gave me the scrolls as my ordination gift. You know, and so the uncle was imprisoned for 20 years in China, and when he got out, he wrote these scrolls and sent them to his nephew, who was going to become a priest as well. And so, oh, I was privileged. I thought, I still have them and treasure them. But 4 years later, after 4 years of theology, I had to ask Antai the same question. You know, people are going to ask me what these say. What does it say? What does it say? You know, knowing now he had a good command of the English language, and his response was, too difficult, too difficult. And but that didn't satisfy me. It probably didn't satisfy him either, because you could see that he was thinking. He was thinking long and hard about what to say, about what these two scrolls were saying to him and to anyone. And finally he said, this is how he explained it. He says, one of these scrolls speaks about the meaning of God in our lives. Remember, written by a man who was imprisoned 20 years just for believing in the Catholic faith. And he wrote this scroll saying that God means some. Our relationship with God is a sacred thing. We need to keep recalling that. We need to keep, lifting it up. We need to keep unfolding it and understanding the meaning of God in our lives. And I said, well, what does the other one say? And he says, the other one speaks about the action of God in the world. How God interacts with the world. Of course, it's the incarnation, but the ongoing gift of the Holy Spirit acts in the world, in our world. And so that's what it means, he said. And I says, anything more? That's enough, he said. That's enough. So I took it. I took what I got from him, and I needed to draw my own conclusions about what he said. You know, what about my relationship with God? What about how God interacts with the rest of the world? You know, that says a lot to us. You know, so I believe that the one scroll talks about stewardship in the sense that how our relationship with God impacts us. It's personal. The meaning of God in my life, the meaning of my relationship as a disciple of Jesus Christ is going to make me the person that I am. That's the one scroll. I'm sure of it. And the other one is the action of God in the world. I think that's the new evangelization. I think that God acting in the world is evangelizing the world. Now, maybe we don't think it's enough, but it has never been enough. But it keeps going. It keeps going. And so I think I know what the Chinese scrolls say, without reading Chinese. But do we understand that in our own lives? So after I informed the good sisters that I was willing to come, and after I came up with the topic to myself, you know, I prayed about it, well, let's build a bridge between stewardship and the new evangelization. And I thought, what a great idea. Thank you, Holy Spirit, for giving me that idea, that inspiration. And then when I started to do it, my thoughts were the same as Antai. Too difficult, too difficult, too difficult. But I'm also too stubborn. And I hope we all are. I was too stubborn to ignore something that is this essential, this important to our faith, which is what we believe about God in our lives. What can be more important than that? Our personal relationship with God, what can be more important than that? And then our lives as disciples of Jesus Christ, which makes real God's actions in the world. What can be more important than that? So it's stewardship, and it's the new evangelization. It's personal, but it's not private. That's evangelization. So with that said, I think we might be in for kind of an interesting journey here this weekend, all of us. And I guess I am privileged, really, and humbled to be back here and in this wonderful place. enjoying the hospitality of these wonderful sisters and connecting once again with all of you, people that I met last year, new people that have come this year. And by the grace of God, we may start out with something that we think is too difficult, way too difficult. But let it become an inspiration for each of us to journey beyond what we learn here and know that God, who called you here to spend this time, will be with us throughout our time together in the sacraments that we celebrate, as we just have, in the hospitality that we experience, and in the personal revelations that are awaiting each and every participant. Are you open to that? Why else would you be here? We are all open to it. So do we really know what we're talking about when we use those terms, stewardship and the new evangelization? Do we see them and understand those terms as a means of defining the mission of the church? We should, because the church does. Stewardship and evangelization is not just the fad of the moment. It has always been our call to be faithful stewards and to share that with other people. So stewardship and evangelization is not something that's new. So really, when you say new evangelization, well, tomorrow we're going to get into, well, what's new about it? Do we see ourselves as key players in the mission of the church? You know, if this was a football team right here in this room, certain people would have certain functions. We think, okay, we're going to put all of our trust in this person here really knows what they're doing. Let them do it. Let them do their what they're talented enough to do. That's not the way this works. Because every single one of us, if we know and understand stewardship, have been given gifts of some kind, but not just to say, well, God has gifted me with this, but let somebody else do that. We need to find a way to use those gifts in order to continue the mission of the church. And you probably have found that in the way you're, you know, the ministries that you're doing and that, but, you know, it might be that there's something more that God might be calling you to do. Maybe a change in the ministry. Maybe a different thought about the ministry. Maybe just a reaffirmation of what you're already doing. But recognizing that you're not just doing this for yourself. We do it to carry on the mission of the church. We do it for everybody else. And I that's okay. That's definitely okay, because I really believe that that is evangelization. And while I'm not always comfortable with that word, maybe because of what I've seen others do with it, I'm not afraid of it. I can't be afraid of it. I need to embrace it, and I need to live that as much as I need to live stewardship as a way of life. I'm absolutely convinced of that. So I think that's something I'm going to throw at you right now to begin this, and to recognize that stewardship as a way of life is a wonderful, wonderful, great way for you to live your life as a disciple of Jesus Christ. But there needs to be a bridge between that and what do I do with it now? Is it just my gift? Is it just my understanding? No. Go out to all the world and tell them the good news. You received it as gift. Now, what are you going to do with it? You're not going to pack it away in the back of the closet, are you? We can't. We're not called to do that. So that's where this whole thing comes in for us to understand how we embrace what we've been given, but how do we share it with other people? How do we share it with other people? So what that really comes up, what that led me to the next step to did was I started to think, so what came first? Does stewardship lead us to the new evangelization? Or does the new evangelization lead us to stewardship? And then I found myself thinking about that old philosophical question, what came first, the chicken or the egg? Have you ever asked anybody that? Don't. Don't. But it seemed to be, you know, the thinking that, well, if people think that stewardship grows out of new evangelization, or do people think it's the other way around? You know, as I said, I did it once at a table when I was having a breakfast with the Knights of Columbus at our parish, and I thought, what am I doing? Why am I asking this question? What came first, the chicken or the egg? And it started a heated discussion between the five of us that were sitting at the table, and I wish I had kept my mouth shut and just ate my pancakes in silence, you know. But that isn't evangelization. You know, sometimes when we're uncomfortable about something, especially about our faith, we need to talk about it. We need to wrestle with it. And we need the Holy Spirit's guidance to give us the courage to speak up to the people that we love, the people we care about, the people on the same journey as we're on. Because that is what stewardship is about. If it's good news, why keep it to yourself? So before you think that I'm not courageous enough to tackle the chicken and egg controversy, I did a little research. I did a little research, and this is what I found. One author said, according to the creator of chickens, we know who that is, God, right? And the author of the record of their origins, that's also God. Chickens came first, okay? Because it was on the fifth day of creation that God created every winged fowl after their kind. That's in Genesis, chapter 1, verse 21, if you're taking notes. Complete with the DNA to reproduce that kind. Then he blessed them, saying, be fruitful and multiply using that DNA. Not in those words. So for the chickens, this meant lay chicken eggs. Problem solved. But it still makes me wonder, does stewardship lead us to new evangelization? Or does the new evangelization lead us to be faithful stewards? Or doesn't it matter? You know, what the egg, the chicken, we eat both. You know. Is it really that important to us what came first? You know why? I ask that because both of them are absolutely essential. We need good stewardship in our church. You have seen in your own parish the benefits of that. You know the graces and what happens when that happens. We also need the new evangelization. It's not some other thing out there that the church wants us to think about. It's not that new. The mission of the church isn't new. It's always been the same. What's new about it? Why would they call it the new evangelization? I think I got that figured out. We're the ones who are new to it. We are picking up where others have left off. We are the new evangelization. We continue that mission by doing what? Using time, talent, and treasure, stewardship. So some could say that for our discussion that one can certainly argue that Jesus called us first to evangelize. You know, go out into the world and tell the good news, okay? But one could also argue that to do so, one must make a decision to use time, talent, and treasure in order to evangelize. We're back to where we started from. But the fact of the matter is, we often hear a lot about both of these two things. But unfortunately, we often hear about them separately. Oh, this is stewardship, and this is evangelization. We need both. Our church exists today because we've had both. We need to continue to have both, alive and active. So both require a commitment and a dedication on the part of the believer, you and I. We can't just say, I'll do one, but I won't do the other. I'm that convinced of it now. Both require an understanding of what we are getting ourselves into. And both of them call the baptized to do their part, using their gifts to continue the mission of Jesus Christ. You think you're up to it? We better be. We are baptized. We can't think that that was a sacrament that happened a long time ago. It's continuing to happen in you and I. Now, we use our fingers in the holy water font to remind ourselves of that. And that's reminding us that we are called to be good and faithful stewards, and we are called to be the evangelizers of the world today. And I think, and I hope, and I pray that all of us will pray that we are up to it. Because I think it's important that we accept both. Or if you prefer to accept stewardship and the new evangelization, or the new evangelization and stewardship, it's quite a mouthful. Nevertheless, it's a heartful of our dedication as disciples of Jesus Christ. Both. Both. Maybe some of you remember last year I told you a story about a young man in our parish named Jeremy, who was an Air Force person who came to Minot, a newly assigned, and when he was looking for the parish, he chose ours. He chose ours, and so when he walked in the door, someone said, "Welcome to St. John the Apostle Church." You know, and it sounds simple enough, doesn't it? Nah, it was for him, you know, but it's something that stayed with him. And Jeremy was a shy, very hesitant, cautious airman who attended Mass every week, very faithful. But he was welcome to St. John's when he first came there looking for a parish to attend, and someone greeted him at the door one weekend when he first arrived. And it was someone who was a stranger to him, welcoming him to a place that was strange to him, and he never forgot it. That small gesture made a difference in the life of a young airman's life. It helped him become involved in the church. Eventually, Jeremy became a greeter at St. John's, a miracle, considering where he'd come from. Why did he become a greeter? Why? Because what someone did for him, he decided he could do and should do for others. Now Jeremy is restationed in New Mexico. And he stays in touch with me. He emailed me, and he said that what he brought to his next parish in New Mexico was the desire to welcome people. Another miracle. He got involved in the greeters ministry in his parish in New Mexico. You know, it was his stewardship. It was his way of evangelizing. It was discipleship expressed as both. And isn't that what we're trying to do in our own lives? Even the smallest things that you can do for another is a way to evangelize or be the good news for others. For Jeremy, it was good news to say welcome to a completely unfamiliar place. That was good news to him. We need to recognize that evangelization can be effectively done in small or large ways. You know what? It doesn't have to be too difficult. It can be simple, as it was in Jeremy's story. It can be complicated, but both are profound. In a recent South African trial, a frail black woman faced a man named Mr. Vanderbeck, who had been found guilty of murdering her son and her husband. The son had been shot at point blank range and burned, and the people burned the body while his officers, this Mr. Vanderbeck, partied. They were partying while this was going on. Several years later, he and the security police and colleagues returned to the same place, and they doused the husband of this woman with gasoline, and then set him aflame. In the courtroom, Mr. Vanderbeck had just confessed to doing it. As a member of the South African Truth and Reconciliation Commission, they asked the woman, "So what do you want? What do you want? How should justice be done to this man who was so brutally destroyed, who brutally destroyed your family?" The woman said, excuse me, "My husband and son were my only family. So what I want, therefore, for Mr. Vanderbeck was to become my son." to become my son, I would like him to spend a day with me twice a month so that I can pour out on him the love I still have. And I would ask someone to lead me across the courtroom so that I can take Mr. Vanderbeck in my arms and let him know that he is truly forgiven. As the assistants led the woman across the room, friends and neighbors in the courtroom began singing softly, "Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me." Mr. Vanderbeck, overwhelmed, hears none of it. He has fainted. Was justice done that day? What was this woman? This is a profound story. I mean, I get choked up every time I think about it. What was she doing? Was it stewardship? Was it her willingness to think how important time is? So her time with a man who killed her own son and husband was time well spent to show him something that he probably couldn't even imagine in his life. She was doing stewardship in kind of a profound way. But what else was she doing? She was evangelizing to the world that forgiveness can happen in some of the worst possible situations. I don't know if I could do what she did. Could you? Sometimes I think maybe that is some of the things that we're being asked to do. Too difficult? Too difficult? Was it too difficult for Jesus to die on the cross for us? Was it too difficult for St. Agatha to go to her death for us? I mean, for her, the witness of her faith? You know, we don't realize, I think, how important evangelization is needed in the world today. You just heard two stories. One's very simple. One's very profound. Definitely, both are stewardship stories, and both of them are evangelizing the world about forgiveness, about caring, about warmth, about being accepted. There's a lot of things going on in those two stories. What's going on in your life that can definitely call us to understand and to name it as stewardship and the new evangelization? So the bishops realized how important this was. They did. They wrote two documents back in 1992, one called Go and Make Disciples. I don't know if you've ever read that document. I didn't read it until I got into stewardship. So if you were going to go with the chicken and egg thing. But that document was written in the first part of the year, and it was to include a part in it on stewardship, because they thought that, well, it's needed. Go and Make Disciples is about the new evangelization. But then at the last minute, they decided to pull that stewardship part out and say, this is important enough to have its own document. So in the fall of that same year, 1992, they wrote Stewardship, A Disciple's Response. I don't know if you're familiar with that. But initially, I was told that those two things were supposed to be together. Somehow along the line, they were separated. And somewhere along the line, I think the church saw them, or people saw them, as two separate things. I'll do one, but not the other. So the whole point of this conference right now is to somehow bring them back together again. So I'm going to say this to the priests of the Diocese of Birmingham on Monday. We got to bring this back together again, you know, and ask our bishops to see what they can do that. I've got friends who are my classmates who are bishops, and I've brought that up to them. I brought up to my own bishop. He says, you know, we talk about it, but that's all we do. Stewardship and the new evangelization moves us beyond talking. It moves us to act. And so I'm hoping that they will be willing to do that. Because as long as we strive to be a disciple of Jesus Christ, we are embracing stewardship, and we are embracing the new evangelization, and we are living as we are called to live, as long as we do both. Do you think it's important enough to say you can't do one without the other? Can you have an egg without a chicken? Let's hope not, because then we know what we're getting into. But we need both in our lives. We look for experiences sometimes to bring us to new heights. Just before Thanksgiving last year, I had a thrill of the lifetime, a thrill of a lifetime. I was contacted by a lieutenant colonel of the Air Force from our base. And he offered me, he says, you know, you do so much for the military, we want to give you a gift. And I said, a medal? He says, no, no. We want to give you a chance to fly a B-52 flight simulator. Now, do you know what that is? It's you put yourself into the cockpit of a B-52 airplane, and you fly it. It's everything around you is simulated, but you actually have all the sensations of flying a B-52. I says, I never flew it before in my whole life. So he says, well, this will be interesting for you. And he says, you want to do it? I said, of course I want to do it. And we scheduled it. And I showed up at the base, got into the flight seat, which in fact takes almost like an acrobatic feat. You just can't walk in, sit down, and buckle up. Don't try to imagine me doing this because it's not going to be pretty. There's handles in the top of the cockpit that you have to hoist yourself up and lower yourself into the flight seat. If any of you have ever known, it's not an easy task. And I thought, if I can get into the seat, I might be able to fly this plane, you know. But I did. I got into the seat. I buckled up. And the flight instructor told me what the panel did and all these different instruments did. And then he said, okay, I'm giving you the order. Take her up. And I had just enough information to taxi out to the runway. And okay, and he says, wait for the clearance. And I had the headphones on, and I waited for the order. And they said, cleared for takeoff. And I pushed the throttle that's in the middle of the two seats, all eight engines, and I propelled us down the runway, and I pulled back on the wheel, and we were airborne, simulated, but airborne. All the sensations were there. What a thrill. What a thrill it was. And soon, he says, take us up to 10,000 feet. 10,000 feet. So it seemed real, and it was as close as I'll ever get to flying a real plane. But I thought about that afterwards, and it was a gift. It was a gift. It was a thrill. It was quite an experience. And what he said is, you know, takeoffs are optional. You have to decide to do it. Landings are mandatory. So land this thing, he said, land this thing, and I was able to do it. So I think about that, but I also think about that, you know, we look for experiences in our lives. Sometimes they fall into our lap to bring us to new heights of our faith. We are called to be a part of the mission that Jesus Christ wants to do. We do it for him. We do it for others. That's the way it is. He's the commander. He's giving the orders. He assumes that the authority for the mission. He always did. And he needs us to help him carry it out. So, the first disciples were the initial crew. They were given the orders. They went out and they did it, even after some hesitancy. But the mission has expanded. The church has expanded and continues to do so. So, and it does that even at this very minute in this room. The church is growing. Can you feel the growing pains happening within you right now? We are now the crew, you and I. We continue the mission and we take others to the new heights of their faith. We have that opportunity. The woman in the courtroom took that opportunity, and from the depths of her heart, she took it to new heights. That story continues to be told. And it continues to evangelize people. Jeremy, his story took it to another parish. And who knows how many people he's welcomed? Who knows how many people were looking to be welcomed to the parish he now serves? So we, and in some sense, we are that instrument panel. We are the instrument panel that is used to take off and take us and others to a destination. We use our time, we use our talent and our treasures to continue the mission of the church as we understand it and as our Lord has commanded. Stewardship and evangelization. They together, that's the throttle. That's the throttle that, when pushed, moves us forward. You and I. Tomorrow, the two conferences will get more specific about understanding and practicing the mission of the church as it is experienced in stewardship and the new evangelization. In the morning of the first conference, we're going to be focusing more about specifically about stewardship. And in the afternoon conference, we're going to go more into understanding the new evangelization. But I want you to think about this as intimately connected. They are the two scrolls in our lives. They're not in Chinese. They're in a language, the Word of God, that we can understand. Not completely at first, but it's being offered to us. The Word of God, the sacraments, call us to be and understand how God is in our own lives and how God works in the lives of everybody else. But they also challenge us, you and I. They challenge us. And so on Sunday morning, during the final conference, we're going to celebrate the marriage, the marriage of the two, that both of them have one, become one for the mission of the church, the mission of Jesus Christ. And the two shall become one. You know, when I think about what I'll put in my will, I'll put those scrolls in there because I think they're valuable, not just personally, but I think there's probably some real value to them. But I'm going to put in the will, don't separate them. They belong together. Just as stewardship and the evangelization will definitely be together as far as I'm concerned. He blessed them saying, be fruitful and multiply. You've heard that before. It's scriptural. To be fruitful is to live stewardship as a way of life. To multiply is to evangelize, calling others to the life of an authentic Christian. So that's our calling. That's our purpose. It's the mission of the church. Stewardship and the new evangelization. One is the egg and the other is the chicken, but it doesn't matter which one. Both are God's plan. Both are his plan for now. And isn't that what all that matters? How do we move on forward? How do we push that throttle and move down the runway? How do we take the church to new heights? One bit of it at a time. One person at a time. So my prayer for each person here at this retreat is that you and I, because I'm going to include myself in this, I have to, because this journey really started out by my saying, what can I also learn from this? So it's been a real challenge. So my prayer for all of us at this retreat is that we embrace stewardship as a way of life, which we already have, but I think we need to continue to do it again and again and again, and to see our role, yours and mine, as a part, a vital role in the new evangelization. We're not excluded from it. It doesn't refer to someone else and not us. We are baptized Christians, and that call is loud and clear. So it may be my prayer, but it is also God's call that you and I must be attentive with an open heart and a strong faith. That's why we're here. So see yourself as God sees you. See yourself as God sees you. We stand in front of a mirror and we see what is on the outside. But God sees and knows what's on the inside of us. He knows what's in the depths of our heart. God sees and knows what he needs to see, and he knows, and at times he reveals to us what's on the inside that we can see and others will see on the outside. So I think this retreat is really a good time to put the two together. Isn't it that really the reason why you came here today? You came here to explore your own image as God's child, to find out that as God's child, he's got something he wants you to do, and it's very, very important.